Questions, though, if you're listening around the world on the internet or wherever you might be listening on your iPhone or your smartphone, you can call the show. I might be able to give you a little bit of direction, but I'm only licensed in Florida, just to let you know. All right, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Let's go to Cindy in Tampa.
Hello.
Hey, Cindy.
Hi. I'd like to ask about estate planning for my cat.
Mm-hmm.
My cat is a special needs cat, so I always think, you know, if something happens to me, I want to make sure that it has money to go with the cat.
Mm-hmm.
And but I want it to go with, like, I don't know how to do it, so somebody could take care of the cat. Any ideas?
Well, yeah, sure. We do pet trust all the time, or at least part of it. You can do a separate pet trust, or you can do leave money to for the benefit of your pet in your will or trust. So
okay.
What there's language in there, like you could leave so many dollars, you know, or you could leave a percentage of your estate. Now, if you had a living trust, for example, which would probably be the best way to do this, you would set aside an amount of money or percentage of money for the benefit of your cat. You would have instructions in there of what you want done with the animal. You could give a caregiver for the cat or the new owner of the cat, a monthly allotment. You could set aside money for the medical care for the cat and all of that type of situation. So it'd be important to know who you want the cat to go with. And it'd be important for you to have... Yeah. Well, there's some agencies, there's some no-kill... You know, animal agencies that take pets, and all you have to do basically is to leave them an amount of money in your estate to accept and care for the pet.
Okay. Would you suggest a trust or just something in the will for them?
Well, I think it's going to be less costly if you do a trust and set aside money in a trust for their care. Because if you just set aside it in a will, then it's going to be supervised by the court and go through probate.
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, so if you do a living trust, you can avoid all that.
Okay, great.
So
you guys do that.
Yes, ma'am. And I've done that before and I've been able to find some no-kill agencies out there that provide these type of services. And you could go meet and interview some of them if you wanted to. If you want to contact me off the air here, we'll give you a couple of suggestions for that and go from there.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. If you have a legal question, you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That makes me remember about a client I had that she had pets that she wanted to take care of, but there were horses. She had about 12 horses. And what we did was she knew where they wanted to go. She knew where she wanted them to live. She knew who would be their caretaker or owner. So we set aside a plan for so many dollars per horse for the caregiver to, you know, be able to make a little money for the caring of the horses. Set aside a certain amount of money for their care and medical care and so forth. So all of that can be worked out through estate planning and the plan to take care of your pets. Let's go to Aaron in Sarasota.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Aaron. Hey, Aaron, do you have a pet?
Taking my phone. Yeah, I have three cats, but I'm definitely not going to set up a trust for them.
You know, some people, some people don't set up money for their care of their pets, but they do have a plan as to where the pets would go. So, you know, but some people know that family members would take care of that and don't worry about it too much.
That's correct.
All right.
In my case, that would be the case. Yes.
All right.
My reason for calling is my mother was recently Baker acted, and when she was in the hospital, she was diagnosed with dementia, which it was finally, I mean, we knew it, I saw this coming a long time ago, but now she has an official diagnosis of having dementia. And she'd been having trouble for a long time, you know, taking care of her bills and things like that. So we had set up a sort of a very basic power of attorney that you can download from the internet. They call it a durable power of attorney. And I had a local notary fill it out for me. Now, at this point, now that my mother's been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm essentially going to have to do everything for her, do I need to officially get guardianship? Will that power of attorney has been working for me in terms of
Yeah, a power of attorney is a document that usually helps you to avoid the guardianship process, which is very expensive, time-consuming, and costly to be appointed the guardian.
Okay.
Does she have assets, though, that you might be concerned about upon what happens to them upon death?
Well, yeah, they would go to me,
are they set up with you as a beneficiary?
Well, I'm the first beneficiary, and then my daughters are the second in line with like 50-50 split. So,
okay,
but my suspicion is she developed dementia at a very young age. My suspicion is that most of this money is going to get used up paying for the care necessary for her to make it to the end. So,
now where does she live?
In Sarasota.
Does she live in assisted living or a nursing home?
Yes. Yeah, she's currently living inside of a memory care unit at an assisted living facility. She just moved in there a couple of days ago. So, her rent. She also has a pension that will cover about 65% of the cost of it, and then she has she has a few hundred thousand dollars in retirement savings that I will have to start drawing from to add to that balance of what the pension covers. But there's just no telling how long she's going to live. So
yeah, does she have a will?
I don't think so. I mean, I got to dig through all of her paperwork, but I don't think that she does.
Does she have the minimal? I mean, you just have to have minimal capability to do a will. Does she have the capability to sign a new power of attorney or maybe sign a legal document?
Possibly, but I mean, she's been deemed incompetent by the psychiatrist at the hospital. So I don't know what.
All right. Well, if that's true, then she couldn't sign a legal document, most likely. Hey, Aaron. Right. The other thing is that I have a full time Medicaid attorney on staff. So under the circumstances that I understand so far, is that she would probably you could probably use the power of attorney, but that would have to be reviewed to create what's called a personal service contract. Which means all of her money could be possibly transferred to a personal service contract, and then she would qualify for Medicaid, and the money that you have that you have access to could then be used for her extra and supplemental needs, but it wouldn't be a countable asset that would disqualify her for Medicaid. If her monthly pensions and so forth exceed the amount of money she would have, then we could have those transferred to what's called a personal service a contract as well, and we do a qualified income trust to capture the extra retirement money that would disqualify her. So it's very possible you could preserve most of her estate, if not all of it, by doing some Medicaid planning and qualify her for Medicaid benefit.
But most of that money, about $200,000 of it is in a Roth IRA, and so if the money is taken, if the money was removed from that,
the taxes have already been paid. IRA, the taxes have already been paid.
Maybe it's not a Roth. I gotta look. I'm getting confused. I don't have it in front of me because I'm in my car driving somewhere.
But regardless, if her bill is $8,000 to $10,000 a month.
At the moment, her bills are just her living expenses at the assisted living facility are 48. That's what she's paying, 48.
Okay.
And her pension is 33. She gets about $3,300 a month of a pension. So.
Okay. But all I'm trying to tell you that all of the money could be protected, and she could probably qualify for Medicaid with probably two simple Medicaid planning documents, which would be a personal service contract and a qualified income trust.
Okay. I've never heard of this personal service contract. So
yeah.
That's new to me. Yeah, I mean, if all of the... If you're saying, so she could take her two different retirement accounts that, you know, were like with Fidelity and Oppenheimer, that those you're saying could be pushed into the personal service contract. And
yes,
then,
sir.
Then
yeah, if you want to contact me,
eligible
yeah, if
for
you want to,
Medicaid.
If you want to contact me, you can send me an email and just ask me to have my Medicaid attorney give you a call for a full discussion on this, of how her money can be asset protected.
Okay. Yeah. I'll look on your website when
it's really simple. It's Joe, Joe, and then it's the @ATTY. That's just the abbreviation for attorney, and PIP, the first three letters of my last name, Pippin, P as in Paul, IP as in Paul.com. So just Joe @addypip.com.
Excellent. Okay.
All right, Aaron. All right, look forward to talking to you. All right.
Thank you, Bert.
Let's go to Julie in Sun City Center.
Hello.
Hey, Julie.
Hi. I have a seniority over here.
Ma'am, I'm not understanding you so far. So.
Oh, okay. No, I say that the story is like this: the husband working for a federal employee, right? He's a federal employee.
Okay, husband's a federal employee. All right, got that much so far.
So he doesn't have the Social Security, right?
Okay.
Because when you get to fat, you don't have Social Security.
All right.
And then when the wife asking for the divorce, she say that she had to have entitled for half of his pension, and... But then she has Social Security, so she, if you divide half like that, that means
Okay, ma'am, let me interrupt here. So basically, when a couple goes through a divorce, you can't kind of cherry pick one little asset or one piece of income to figure out who's entitled to what. If they've been married over 17 years, it's usually pretty much a 50-50 split. But there are other considerations that come into play. So there would be financial affidavits signed by both people. And then there's some division of the assets happens either through them agreeing to how they should be split or the court having to decide. But I can't really answer one little question about assets or income, you know, and give you an answer without knowing the whole picture.
Right. So the point that because by law that you say you cannot touch the Social Security of person, right? You cannot divide.
No, but the amount of income that each party would be allowed to keep or take is decided by the court based on all the other circumstances.
Good. Oh, that's good because, it's not fair that the
pension...
divided for two, and then she get half, and he get half, but then actually she has...
Yeah, ma'am, like I said, I can't get to an answer without knowing the full picture. So, and definitely both parties should probably have a family law attorney. So if one of the party, if one of them wants to talk to our family law attorney, her name is Catherine, they can just contact me, and I'd be glad to set that up.
Oh, okay.
All right, but thanks for calling. I'm going to move on to my next caller. Let's go to Steven in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Good morning, Joe.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great.
So are you listening on your computer or iPhone or what? Are you calling from Knoxville, Tennessee?
Yeah. I have Facebook on, but the voice is silent out.
Yeah, I'm not broadcasting live on Facebook today, but anyway, what can I do for you?
Yeah, okay. So I'm calling concerning some media company predominantly presenting a one-sided view of the news. As such, it's not really serving the public under the guise of that is reporting news. So,
but sir, why do you listen to them then? You're not going to change a media company the way they broadcast. You're not going to change CNN or Fox News, and you're not going to change the format or their platform on what they want to say. And, you know, Donald Trump is going
to
say...
tune them out. But here's my second part coming to my question. So what CNN or Washington Post, for example, say is they are guaranteed by freedom of the press, it's a right. But do you think our government has the responsibility of labeling or classifying certain company to be no longer a news organization, but belong to a different category, so the public is aware when they turn on to use the example of CNN that certain programs are no longer just news, but a different category? Can the government bring anything to bear? Is there any case?
Well, certainly there's certainly FCC regulations on all of these and what they can do and what they can say. I doubt you're going to get too much into any control about how they perceive the news and how they report it.
Mm-hmm.
You pick your channels. If you're conservative, you probably will watch Fox News. If you're not, you might watch CNN or some other station or CNBC or whatever. But, you know, people tend to watch what they want to hear, basically, I think. And I don't think there's going to be much regulation on, they're trying to clamp down on Facebook and Google and their political involvement and how they slant the news or prevent certain news and everything. So I don't think you're going to get much better than what you got, but there seems to be some effort in trying to control it better.
What about the fairness doctrine? Shall we bring it back?
Well, like I said, I don't really have any other opinions than what I basically just said about this. I think you just be selective in what you watch. You know, some people, mm-hmm. I know some people that are very, very conservative, but they watch CNN just to see what the other side is saying.
Yeah, that's true.
So I know you've got choices out there that you personally make, and it seems like to me they're making some effort to control what the content that's allowed on Facebook and Google and things like that, and I think that's about the most you're going to get.
Do you think the public can do you think the government has the responsibility of protecting the public by labeling as such? Of course, they can continue, these organizations can continue to broadcast what they want, but the government can put them in a different category.
Yeah, but, you know, take Fox News, for example. There's a news segment, and then there are people like Hannity who says he's not a news broadcaster. He's a commentator.
There's
a mixture on all of these stations of what they consider a news, and there is a mixture of what they consider that's just commentators. Most of the guys like Ingram and Hannity and and so forth, you know, is Rush Limbaugh, is he a news on radio? Is he a news person or is he a commentator? He's a commentator with opinions
only
on it.
So
yeah, I know. Well, he used to have some TV, but he's a commentator.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not strictly news. So there's a mixture on all of these of news and commentators. But again, I think it all boils down to your choices on what you watch. Hey, Stephen, I'm gonna move on and try to answer some legal questions. But I really appreciate you calling. All right.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. All right. If you have a legal question, you have a toll free number 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Let's go to Rick in Clearwater. Hey, Rick.
Hey there, Joe. I wanted to ask questions because there's a lot going on with my family, and my mother's in bad shape. You had said something one time about the reading of a will or a printout of a will and trust. I was wondering how much information a person have, or everybody that I guess is called a trustee.
All right, I'm not quite sure. I asked. So your mother, is it mother or mother-in-law?
Mother.
Mother has a trust?
There's nothing new on her plans, written way back. Yeah, will and
all right. So, are you named a successor trustee when she dies or becomes incapacitated?
I would expect. Okay. I'm not aware of everything. I didn't dig in all her business.
All right. So you're asking me what happens if something happens to her and you become a trustee of the trust?
True.
Okay. So what a successor trustee does is to pay the bills, collect the assets, become the trustee, pay the bills, do the taxes, and then make the distribution according to her instructions. If she's living but unable to...
Right. That would be the executor, wouldn't it?
That would be the successor. That would be the successor trustee if all the assets are in the trust.
Oh, okay. That is not me.
Well, do you know who it is?
I could be included in the trust because there's more than one.
Well, you can include it in the trust as a beneficiary.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay, but yeah. you might not be the trustee. I mean,
I had the wrong term there. Okay, I'd be a beneficiary.
All right.
Okay.
Well, then the successor trustee has the duty to pay the bills, accumulate the assets, pay the bills, do the taxes, give all of the beneficiaries a copy of the trust and an accounting of the assets.
Right. Now, if there was a change in her plans, since this was probably written for at least 15 years or longer, I don't know.
She would have to amend the trust.
So if there's ever an amendment to the trust, it always is dated as in what time that change happened.
No, it would be like the first amendment to the trust if she hasn't made any other amendments, and she can modify who the trustees are, she can modify who the beneficiaries are and what they get.
Right. So everybody that saw the document would see what changes happened when?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Okay, that was the first question, because I listened to your program.
All right. Well, how many questions do you have? Because I'll take one more from you.
Well, I was afraid I'd forget one, you know.
All right, well, go ahead. Well, ask number two. I'm going to take one more question from you, then I'm going to move on here. So what's the second question?
I'm a little lost with it right now, and I don't want to hold up your program.
Well, no, I've got time for one more question. I just didn't know if you had a list, a whole big list. I just wanted to tell you I can take one more.
Well, it was the first time I called a radio station, and that was my main question.
Okay.
How, you know, that I would be really aware of everything that's happening.
Oh, yeah, you're entitled to a full accounting of
when
all...
When it happened, and, you know, what decisions were made where and all.
Yes, sir.
That.
Well, you'd be entitled to a copy of the trust and any amendments, and, of course, the amendments will be dated. Of when the change was made, and then you'll be entitled to a full accounting of all the assets.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Good
Thanks
program.
For being a first-time caller. Keep listening. All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney, All About Florida Law. Again, I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open, and we're open for your question or comment or legal discussion. All you have to do is to call our toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. You know, sometimes things get tangled up in estate planning because, you know, a classic example is a mother comes in and she wants to do, a mother or father comes in and she wants to do estate planning. And she will say, I have three children, I want to treat them equally, so I want my will to be three equal shares, and I want to appoint so-and-so as the personal representative. A mother or father's major, the person who comes in to do the will, whose major asset, or in this example I'm giving, is just CDs, and the CDs all have a beneficiary, which is one person. So then mother dies, and the person that's has the beneficiary paid on death, TOD, transfer on death, that person goes to the bank with a death certificate, collects all the assets. Now, the will says three equal shares, But does the will control a CD that's paid on death or transfer on death? No. So then the ones that don't get anything argue, well, mom's will says three equal shares. I want part of that CD. They're not really entitled to it. Because your will only controls what you die with just in your name. It doesn't have any control over paid on death or transfer on death or beneficiary accounts. So the will in that case was pretty worthless as to far as to those accounts. Now, if mother had other assets like a home or other accounts that didn't have POD or TOD, the will would control those, but the will would go through probate. So let's transfer this example to a living trust. Person has a living trust. They appoint a successor trustee, and their trust has three equal shares of all the assets in the trust, get equally distributed to my three children. Well, let's suppose in the middle of all of that, there is one big account that has a TOD, a transfer on death, to one child. Well, hey, guess what? That one child gets that one account. Everything else that might be in the trust would be divided three equal shares. But, you know, there people can make, they need to know that everything is controlled about how it's titled. And some people don't take the time and effort to make sure their wishes of three equal shares is really going to happen by the way they've titled some of their other assets. Hey, if you have a question about any of this, you can call our toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. 9673 phone lines are open. Let's go to Paul in Ponte Vedra.
Yes, sir. I have a question about summary probate.
Okay.
Okay, my father-in-law and mother-in-law were on our title to our house. I was not listed because this happened so many years ago. Then we refinanced our house in 2013, which included my name on the mortgage, my wife's name on the mortgage, and my father-in-law, mother-in-law on the mortgage. The title was never changed. All right, mother-in-law and father-in-law passed away. The mother-in-law passed away 5 years ago. The father-in-law passed away this year. In the will.
Well, let me understand this, though. So your name is not on the deed of record and never has been transferred from them to you to add your name or your wife's name to the deed, but you are on.
No, the wife's on the deed.
Your wife's on the deed?
Yeah. See, the deed back in 2008, when we first took the mortgage out before we refinanced it, had me as joining the mortgage, but they never amended the deed, the warranty deed.
I see.
To add my name.
Okay.
So when we refinanced, they didn't issue a new warranty deed. It was the same bank. But they never
Well, no, the bank would not have issued a mortgage deed, and because you were the spouse, I'm just trying to guess out the answer here. So, because you were the spouse, you were obligated to. It's a homestead.
Yes. Because
it's a homestead, the bank would get you to sign on the mortgage to make you liable because you have certain spousal rights as a spouse of that owns it. Let me simplify this for you. So. Is your wife the total owner right now?
Yes, because the
well, your wife can do a new deed adding you to the property.
Yeah, but there's a little glitch to this thing. There are six heirs to. All right, first of all, my father-in-law and mother-in-law had a piece of property they occupied that they owned outright. No mortgage, no nothing. All right. The six heirs received that house. to dispose of in equal shares. However, they didn't. They filed for summary probate rather than formal probate, and they're claiming that our house, because their signatures were on it, is part of his estate. So they own a portion of our house. So they filed a property ownership document with summary probate, and it was accepted. I had no knowledge that they did this. They hid it from me.
Now, how long ago did this happen?
About a month ago. Because they're getting ready to sell that house that they inherited. And they didn't want our property, his interest in our property, as part of his estate. So, because that would send it into formal probate, because the value would exceed $75,000, you see. I did not know this had happened.
Yeah.
So I called probate, and they said, well, you only had 10 days to protest it and 30 days to appeal it. Well, that had expired because I didn't know it was happening. So now I would like to receive my shares of my property back.
Yeah. Paul, you're going to need to make an appointment with a probate attorney. I mean, this is with a 1 or 2 minute phone call, I can't solve this problem for you. So you're going to need to talk to a probate attorney who is going to, you know, fight for you if there is any rights you have. So I'm a little bit confused in the question fact. So are there two properties here or one we're talking about?
Well, the property of the mother and father-in-law is the property the heirs are trying to sell.
Okay, but that is the property that your wife, you consider the owner of, that you're on the mortgage, that property is not in jeopardy in any way, right?
Well, except the ownership of it goes to the heirs and equal shares.
Well, okay, so it's all going to go back to, let me just say this, and then you're going to need an appointment with an attorney. I'd be glad to meet with you, though, if you don't have one. But really, to me, from the question, as much as I can understand the question, is so if the four names of the four names, your father-in-law, mother-in-law, your wife, and you, in three names were on the deed, but you're on the mortgage. If the three deed names on the deed were with right of survivorship, then your wife would be the total owner, and your wife could do a new deed, putting your name on there, so you and her own the property together.
That's what I was thinking.
Hold on. The one thing that I would probably need to check if I was going to be involved in this with you would be, it's key that the right of survivorship is on the deed with your wife and her parents. Because if there are just three names and there are no magic words with right of survivorship, it's possible that your wife only owns a portion of it. And when the father-in-law died, that his share would be subject to some probate because it didn't have the words of right of survivorship, which means it's tenants in common, which means that part of his estate would still have to go through probate.
That was my question.
Yeah, so I would have to get involved enough to be able to see the deeds of record to be able to answer your question. Otherwise, I'm just kind of guessing as to why this happened. And it sounds like what happened was that it was not with right of survivorship, so your wife never was the total owner, and because it was tenants in common, then the father-in-law's estate would be subject to probate.
But they didn't take it to probate. They took it to summary probate.
Well, no, that's still probate. That's just a simplified form.
Yeah.
So, okay, Paul, you have to get an attorney involved to look at the deed and chain of ownership and the words on the deeds and right of survivorship versus tenants in common are probably the most important issue to look at.
What about Tennessee in its entirety, in the state of Florida?
Well, but see, it could be it could have tenants in entirety between your in-laws, which meant if one of them died, then their share would go to the other. But it might not have the words in there somewhere on the deed with right of survivorship between the surviving in-law and your wife to make her the total owner. That's the issue.
Okay.
Got it? That's kind of complicated, but, you know, I'd be glad to sit down with you, or you need to hire a probate attorney to look at everything for you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. By the way, anyone who wants to contact me, here's how you do it. If you want our free estate planning poster sheet, love to mail this to you. It has all the options in estate planning. If you want to grab something to write with, I'm going to go talk to Paul here in Clearwater. When I come back, I'll give you all the contact information for the office and also how you can get the free estate planning poster sheet. Let's go to Paul in Clearwater.
Good morning.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. This is sort of a broad question, but what normally is a fee for a demand letter?
Well, I think every attorney is going to charge differently on that, but I would say the fee could be from maybe $100 to $300 for just a letter.
Yeah.
The problem is when you get write a letter, sometimes you have to figure out if there's going to be some future involvement or responses, or, you know, it's going to be more than just writing the letter. It's going to be some after, you know, it's going to be a response. Then you maybe have to respond to the letter, and then, or maybe then you have to, you're involved with maybe a threat. If you don't do this, then we're going to go to small claims court to settle it. Then the attorney that writes a letter is obligated to follow up on it. You just can't write idle threats to people. And then, you know, so forth. It really kind of involves in the circumstances. But if a client wants me to write a letter, I mean, I would say it's between $100 and $300 probably. But then you have to consider if, you know, if it's going to be some payment for any after action.
Yeah, there was very moderate after action here, and I was charged $1,500, and I thought that was a little bit on the high end for a demand letter.
Yeah, well, I guess you agreed to it before the letter was written, though, and you could have maybe shopped around a little bit.
The agreement was the other party was going to pay it, and as it turned out, I was forced to pay it. So there's a little bit of discomfort on my side here.
Well, sometimes you should get a fee agreement with the attorney so everything is clear that you're not going to pay. He's taking it on a contingent basis, and the other party's going to pay. I mean, there's a lot to your question. You know, it doesn't always just a simple.
Of course.
Yeah. All right.
I realize that. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's go to Samuel.
Good morning, Joe.
Is it Samuel?
Yes. I'm a little nervous, but I have a marital question. If I have three investment properties purchased with funds, pre-marital funds.
I mean, you have three properties.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Marital funds.
Okay, so you have hold on. You have a premarital agreement?
No.
Okay, but you had money set aside before you were married and you bought three properties with it?
Yes, actually funds from 401k.
And you want to know if your new spouse has any rights to these? Because the money was pre... Well, the thing is you should have had a premarital agreement. And once you're married, if you die, you can't totally omit your spouse. She could contest your will and live in the homestead for life, possibly sell the homestead and take half the proceeds and get 30% of everything else. So is your question more worried about if you die or if you get divorced?
Forget divorce.
Well, divorce depends. So the answer to the divorce question depends on, so you've been married less than 7 years?
Less than four.
Okay. So there are like three levels of marriage and what property rights or what your spouse would be entitled to. So if you're married less than 7 years, your spouse is going to get less. If you're married between 7 and 17 years, they're going to get more. And if you're married more than 17 years, most likely it's going to be close to a 50-50 split. Now, that's very general. But you're married less than seven, so she's going to get less, but she's entitled to something. And every fact pattern of every divorce case is a little bit different on what they're entitled to.
Okay. Now, second question. Of course, I would need your one of your people.
Yeah, I have a family law attorney on staff. Her name is Catherine, so she works and she'd be glad to talk to you and discuss your options.
Okay, please. Second part of the question is, if the since these are investment properties and the tenants are very slow with payment, the down payment on those properties are in my name. So if the mortgages are now paid, it's going to ruin my credit. So while they are now paying, I have to now make payment from my own funds. And it's causing financial stress. And I really don't want to ruin my credit. Is there any way those properties can be sold and the funds held somewhere pending the final judgment?
Yeah, but you're going to need an attorney. I have an attorney that...
I will.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say yes. And okay. I have an attorney in my office that deals with these type of matters. And I can get you all connected, and he can discuss with you and tell you what your options are.
Okay, that's great, Joe.
All right, I'm going to give all my contact information here in a few minutes. So just you can write it down. You can hang up and write it all down if you want.
Okay, thanks very much.
All right.
Great show, Joe.
Thank you. You're listening.
Have a nice day.
Yeah, you too. Bye. All right. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin. If you'd like to contact our office for an appointment, there's no charge for a first discussion, particularly about estate planning. Depending on some other matters, it might be a fee, but on estate planning matters, there's no charge for the first discussion. If you'd like our free estate planning poster sheet, I'd love to mail that to you. We get, at least 50 requests a week probably to mail this out. We hand these out at seminars and so forth. And speaking about seminars, I have one I want to tell you about here in a few seconds. But if you'd like to send me a request for that, or a request to make an appointment, or a request to talk further, we can even just do a phone conference, or we can do a meeting. It's all free. If you want the poster sheet, here's how you contact the office for any of those things. We have a toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529, extension 200. If you want to call our office and make an appointment, or just request a estate planning poster sheet, 1-800-226-3529. Go to extension 200. If you want to email me a question or a request for the poster sheet, you can email me at Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. That's Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. If you want to text me, you can text to this number, 727-667-3967. 727-667-3967. By the way, I was at an event Wednesday night at Indian Rocks Baptist Church. It was got to be able to speak. Really enjoyed my time with them. Shared a little about with them about some things that I was involved in that kind of related to their group. But we talked to a caregivers group. What a special group of people caregivers are. These are people who make great sacrifices, who often give up a big portion of themselves to care, to move in to someone's, to their parents' home, for example, move in, take care of them. And they have a support group to share stories and to give emotional support. One of the ladies there was very much needed the support of others around her. So I was able to go in and talk about the legal ramifications of a caregiver and what documents to make sure you had, like power of attorney, healthcare surrogate. Talked about the differences between those documents versus a guardianship. Talked about estate planning a little bit, that, you know, make sure if the person's still able to make decisions, they have an adequate estate plan that takes care of everything. If you have a caregivers group that you belong to, or maybe you need to join one, actually, if you don't have one, it's a great, great support group. A lot of ideas were shared about how to do this and that, and how to deal with certain issues. I'd love to come be your speaker to this group. I give talks every week to all kinds of different groups. And if you have a need for a speaker, there's no charge for that. and certainly would be more than interested in coming and talking to you about that. I have a big newcomers group coming up in Jacksonville in November. That's the kind of group that could benefit from this and learning new things about Florida law and everything. If you're a caregivers group, there are lots of things maybe to consider on the legal issue you haven't had. If you belong to just a community group, a home association group, a church group, hey, I'd love to come to these. I do two or three a week, so there's no charge for it. If you want to contact our office about that, it's 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. Go to extension 200. If you want to text me to see what my availability is for your group, you can certainly do that at 727-667-3967. 727-667-3967. If you have questions along the way, remember we're here every week during this time period, and we love to help as many people as we can. And your question when you call in, by the way, helps a lot of other people. A lot of people today listen to our first question, Cindy, talking about pet, how to take care of your pet when you pass away. Mother Baker Act, what to do. Question about problems with names on a deed and ownership of deeds. And, hey, what's going on? What are my in-laws trying to do to me on this? Lots of different questions. Enjoyed them very much. Hope I helped a lot of people. You have a great, great weekend. So long.